folks, and welcome to the episode of Real Geeks that I have been trying to do for 2 years now.
Oh, I joined at the wrong time.
What a wonderful time to be alive.
Yeah, I have literally been trying to find an opportunity to do this review since my debut on the show in episode 2, and now we're in like 40-something.
You got around to it.
What exactly.
Not yet.
As I said before, we have covered Vita's favorite film with Dreamscape. We've covered the review Mickey's been dying to do with The Legion of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I can't believe I missed that. I'm so...
And okay, now...
So the plot begins with a tank going through the streets of London.
Oh, I know the movie. I remember thinking, wow, this is a friggin' mess, seeing it as a kid, but it's like, this is a fun mess,
oh, yeah.
You know? So I'm disappointed that I missed that review, because I would not have minded, you know, visiting that with other people.
you can go back and watch us basically lose our minds for nearly 2 hours.
It's delightful. It's in real time. It's fantastic.
Beautiful.
But meanwhile, it's now my turn with 1994's The Shadow.
Was consumed by evil.
For as long as you can remember, you've struggled against your own black heart.
Shoot through him.
Every man pays a price for redemption.
I'm not looking for redemption.
You have no choice. But I'll teach you to use your black shadow to fight evil.
He became the Shadow.
I didn't see anything, I swear.
Dump him.
Who's there?
Did you think you'd get away with it? Did you think I wouldn't know? Now, when the world is in danger...
Report.
Police investigation of murder. Agent advises inquiry.
Who knows what powers stir in the night?
Whatever you did, it's in the past.
Join me. Inside you beats a heart of darkness.
I do what I do to fight back the evil inside me, but some part of it is still there, waiting.
Genghis Khan conquered half of the world in his lifetime. I intend to finish the job.
And when the adventure begins...
Activate the bomb.
Who knows where it will end? Alec Baldwin, John Lone, Penelope Ann Miller, and Tim Curry. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow.
Exactly.
That was beautiful.
Don't
say one bad thing about my child.
I'm not, like, this had to go in because the trailer is so legitimately fascinating.
Gotcha.
I think I saw that trailer. Like it's pulling from recesses of my brain.
Yeah.
I wasn't alive yet then, so unfortunately, I missed being spared.
I mean, that trailer, like, first and foremost, is the In a World guy away from being one of the most cliché trailers Hollywood has ever produced.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in it. Like,
and that's how... Every trailer used to be. There was no such thing as like an artful trailer. They had to explain it every fucking detail because they legitimately believed that what audiences wanted the most was to know what happened in a film before they saw it. Spoilers didn't exist because that's how you fucking sold the film.
Yeah.
And... Also, like, you often hear about trailers being released before a film's effects are even done.
Yeah.
And, like, Natasha, I think you in particular, being a sound engineering student, are going to love this because none of the audio effects had been applied yet when this trailer was cut. None.
Glorious. Glorious.
You have a property that by this point has literally existed for the entire 20th century. Has its own taglines built in.
Mm-hmm.
And they still had no idea how to sell this thing to the general public.
I mean, I think... Sorry, Michaela, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, because it was in... You said Pulp Magazine, and then there was also a radio show. I'm going based on just kind of what was going on in the movie, 20s, 30s or so.
Yeah, it's...
That's when they were, so then, and then this came out in 95. Well, you know, that by then, even, you know, it'd be the more of the grandparents going, oh, I remember this from my youth, you know? So I guess no shit, they wouldn't know how to sell it because that by then it'd be a very niche market, you know? If they did it in, like, the 40s, maybe the 50s, you know? Definitely be like, oh my god, they're bringing it back. But
actually, funny you should say that, because this is actually not the first Shadow movie.
The Shadow.
Yes, the Shadow.
Of the roughly five or six of them, maybe two actually had Lamont Cranston in them. Yeah, like the Shadow had actually debuted in 1930 as the narrator slash host of several hourly radio programs, and most predominantly the Street and Smith Detective Hour, before fans finally went, no, we actually want stories whoever this mysterious narrator is. And then The Shadow premiered in his own actual weekly show on September 26th of 1937, and ran on a weekly basis until 1954.
Nice. So it's essentially if someone gave the Crypt Keeper a gun?
you're not that far off. except that on the radio shows, the Shadow didn't actually have a gun. The guns, his twin 45s, his group of agents, Shiwan Khan himself, all of that was from the pulp stories. Margot, Hypnotic Powers, those came from the radio show.
So the movie was really quite the amalgamation then of the evolution of the story.
Because those seem to be like two completely different characters if you're separating those very specific things from each other. Like one's essentially Charles Xavier in a trench coat. And the other is the Punisher? Fuck.
Well, more or less. I mean, there's a reason that this is the character that largely inspired Batman.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, the Shadow has been in basically the background of pop culture for close to 100 years now.
Yeah. Oh, and like, speaking of... you know, inspiring Batman, it's Batman that inspired the creation of this film, or at least the financial go-ahead of it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, 1989's Batman was a fucking smash success. Like, that was the summer of Batmania, and it completely redefined... People like to say, oh, Frank Miller redefined Batman. It's like, no, Tim Burton redefined Batman.
Yeah.
Because that's how you actually reach people. People aren't reading his comic book. They're watching the movie. And so that and Returns were such incredible hits that the early 90s is this just parade of pulp attempts to recreate it, like Dick Tracy and such. And I feel like this kind of like they had such a hard time finding a way to sell it because it was 6 years after Batman. If this was in 1992, they could have easily sold it on the whole like 20s, 30s pulp nostalgia that was going around at the time. Like, you know, The Untouchables was made then. There was a bunch of Al Capone garbage. There was a bunch of interest in the 20s and 30s.
Well, like I said, Untouchables was actually 87.
87?
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, Untouchables is a future episode we need to do because I don't know of an action film cliche that cannot be traced back to that movie.
And like, how was it 87? That's fucked up. I love it. I gotta, we gotta do
that
because I don't want to rewatch this. I want to see them shamelessly rip off Potemkin again. Genius steals.
But yeah,
what sells?
So like I said, this character has been around for close to 100 years now, and even when the radio show finally went off the air, there was books, comics,
fan fiction.
Oh, no doubt.
Let's be honest. Probably.
Yeah. And you look at
Batman's fan fiction.
Well, yeah, like even the 90s Batman cartoon, The Gray Ghost.
I love The Gray Ghost.
Who gets extra points for being voiced by Adam West.
Yeah.
But, The Gray Ghost is the shadow in every way imaginable.
As a kid, I used to watch you with my father. The Gray Ghost was my hero. So it wasn't all for nothing.
So, to wrap up the single longest intro we have ever recorded...
You're welcome.
I am, of course, Mike Montgomery. I am joined by Natasha and Mickey. And as far as we know, Vita is still watching the movie and will be joining us later.
I can't wait for that.
Now, I really hope she just, like, launches into it with, like, what the fuck?
Yes. Just instantly the screen is like full of her face, you know?
What happened?
One of the pulp stories, the main difference being that instead of your standard witness being about to be tossed off a bridge, encountering a man who's about to commit suicide, and we have Vita!
Vita!
I don't know what it's taken to get me into here. I am on my phone because my laptop's not working, and tech is not playing nicely with me today.
Not for any of us. Don't worry, hon.
No.
It worked out exactly like I said.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
I'm so happy.
Joe Nemec was a terrific production designer on this show. I mean, we had great sets. And one of the jobs the cinematographer does is you want to make sure that the audience sees the sets that were designed. So you want to make sure that things are staged in a way where you see the sets. When you design sets, I mean, they only really have two things that they can do. And that is you either have layering or you have texture. And Joe was a master of doing both things.
Joseph Nemec. He was perfect, I think, for the shadow. His style is very traditional in a sumptuous way.
Joe was one of the first people I worked with where I just was astounded by the work he'd done. Watching what Joe did, I really was, it was kind of an eye-opening thing for me to see all the work that went in and all the details that went into that wonderful scene where Andre Gregory is at the controls and he's the voice of the control station there with all the pneumatic tubes and all the way New York is laid out that way in that kind of wonderful low-tech way.
Now, with the sequence with Lamont and his uncle, one of the things that I absolutely love here is that, you know how, especially nowadays, people complain about how films are just so much CGI thrown at you? the sequence where Commissioner Wainwright, I refuse to call him Barth. I hate that so much.
Continue on.
Starts talking about, like, he gets a report of the activity with the Shadow. And speaking of which, Lamont's line when he enters the scene, sorry I'm late, there was an accident on the bridge. Beautiful 90s one-liner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the two martinis to follow it up, just perfect.
I know, he's double-fisting martinis of all things.
Well, you know, you gotta keep it going. He's gonna down the first one, and then he's gonna have to wait for the next one? It's just like, really, you know, it's a time saver.
Right? I feel like that entire scene is just his audition reel for a Bond film. Just please
yeah.
Look, I can do two.
Oh, yeah, no, it might as well have been. But I love how when Wainwright starts talking about how, like, you know, I'm gonna put a task force on the Shadow. And when Lamont goes into shadow mode, for lack of a better term.
You're not going to appoint a task force.
No, hell with it. I'm not going to appoint a task force.
You're not going to pay any attention to these reports of the Shadow.
Ignore them entirely.
There is no Shadow.
Well, there is no Shadow. If there were, I'd be Eleanor Roosevelt. Where was I?
Like, this is how they did that. It's literally, he leans back, and they tilted the light down so that he's in the shadow.
Yeah,
they just changed the lighting, that's it!
I figured it was just they got a card or something and, you know, had one of the grips just kind of...
Right.
You know, just kind of, okay. And 3, 2, 1, Carl, now.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, when he leans back, I swear, I know it's not there, but I can hear it in my head, like wheels on a chair, just like rolling him back. Look, I can do it too.
Oh, yeah.
You're in great pain, aren't you? You know what evil lurks in the hearts of men. For you have seen that evil in your own heart. Every man pays a price for redemption. This is yours.
I'm not looking for redemption.
You have no choice. You will be redeemed, because I will teach you to use your black shadow to fight evil. I wouldn't do that.
To see it redone with the effects that we can produce now. I really would, because I don't know if it would lessen the cheese or increase the cheese. Is there a ratio there?
I feel like the datedness of the effects helps it, because it's already dated. It's a pulp thing. Having that dual aspect of, like, this is set in the 30s, plus here's some outdated effects, it actually works better than if the effects were perfect. Like, his shadow clearly being, like, hand animated and having that jitter to it, I love that. If it was a perfectly CGI done shadow, it wouldn't have any of the whimsy to it.
But I mean, it's also just kind of like pulp novels in general too, right? So I mean, they were made to be cheap forms of entertainment, so it obviously bigger budget, but still, you know, a little more on the cheaper end for a Hollywood film.
Yeah, and so, with the effects in this movie, you know, as I think I've mentioned in probably a couple other episodes, this is right at that fascinating point where, in terms of visual effects, things like rear projection, matte paintings, and so forth are just starting to move out, and CG is just starting to come in, because this is literally, like, this is so close to a certain effects benchmark movie that the movie that David Capp wrote right after The Shadow was Jurassic Park.
Ooh.
It's that close.
I was actually going to say, if you want to see like how fast film design, like a film effects can move, check out 1989's Ghostbusters 2, which is, you know, serviceable for an 80s effects film.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, 4 years later, you end up with Jurassic Park. 4 years to go from, again, as you say, using rear projection to full-on CGI that still, in many aspects, not all, but many aspects, holds up today.
Ann Miller plays the Shadow's sexy love interest. Her character has telepathic powers that confuse the Shadow.
Your eyes there.
I have to go.
My character gets to have powers, you know, and still be, you know, good, and then be the love interest, but not ever have to be a victim. And in fact, when she joins forces with the Shadow, or with Lamont Cranston, who's Alec Baldwin, they become a more powerful force as a team.
I am half convinced that Penelope Ann Miller walked out of actual 1930s Hollywood and onto the set. Because, oh my god!
She's got the look.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The look, the wardrobe, the yeah, she... I think I liked her character in part because it was so well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so on point. And I mean, I love her clothes. I have her wardrobe?
I love the hair.
Her and Aunt Rose.
I don't know. I mean, that dress that she came out that he said was, you know, Aunt Rose, and she came around. All right, let's go. It's like, okay, no, change dresses. That's, no. Nah, that wasn't my... Oh,
no.
It's ruffled. Well, you were the one who threw it on the
just
ground there.
Just toss it. I mean, it's velvet. Come on.
Yeah.
You don't just toss velvet.
No. I mean, I've got a pair of rayon pants there on the floor that, you know, I'll probably grab later. Go... Okay, let's go.
Who's there?
Baldwin is having the last laugh with those who thought the Shadow's trademark sound might be beyond his range.
I got it right away. People say to me, how long did you have to work on that laugh? It took me about 15 minutes to get it.
Which also, I want to say what I was thinking this entire time. Alec Baldwin, that's quite the... interesting choice to have as you know, the super-powered crime fighter.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of this is the second time that Alec Baldwin has kind of like attempted to start a career in something else, and Hunt for Red October was obviously the other time, because he keeps trying to sell himself, or kept trying to sell himself, as kind of an action hero, and it just didn't work. He's not Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford could do like Jack Ryan, that Hunt for Red October, and Billy Zane can do the Phantom.
Yep.
Whoever the hell was the Rocketeer? Really good as the Rocketeer.
Billy Campbell.
Time. Who?
Billy Campbell.
Yeah. So he went into that black hole Disney created after they. You know, they released Rocketeer and was never heard from again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like, they were really well casted for what they were doing. And yeah, this is like, what the fuck is Alec Baldwin supposed to be more serious than this? Alec Baldwin is Glengarry Glenn Ross. And yet, I feel this is his greatest performance.
Well, he was cast in part for his comedic talent. This is what was said on that retrospective on the Blu-ray that I mentioned earlier, and I look at Baldwin's time on Saturday Night Live, for instance, and I'm kind of going, I can see the logic. Now that said,
that's why you might cast glasses, guys.
Like, all I can see, the only time I find him funny is his character from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Which is essentially Lamont Cranston if he wasn't the Shadow. So I almost want Lamont Cranston to be more of a dick to actually fit that and just be like, no, no, no. It's, you know, he's just playing it up. But like, you know how Bruce Wayne kind of acts aloof. Cranston decided to just be a complete fucking ass bag. That would have been hilarious. I just bought that children's orphanage. Oh, to save the children? No, to bulldoze it in front of them. Ha!
Well, I mean, also, there's the simple fact that from the moment Lamont lays his eyes on Margot, he's trying to seduce her and reading her mind to do it?
Yeah.
How much more of a dick do you need him to be?
Well, again, started with just having Alec Baldwin, so...
Yeah.
You know?
Well, well, well. If it isn't the tuxedo himself. Shouldn't you be outside fixing the city?
You look even closer to death than usual. What happened to you?
Are you scared? The back of the B train certainly was. I had the whole car to myself.
So this is you figuring out New York? Making the city worse for your own selfish ends? Your gym bag? Aren't you a human woman?
It's these new microfibers. They keep you dry. But it all has to go somewhere.
So, today a subway car. Tomorrow what?
All in good time, Jack.
Will you take something for that cough already?
I'd rather see if it gets better on its own. Do you want me to go on my antibiotic rant? It's endless. You'll beg for death.
There's a war going on out there. And you're gonna have to pick a side. I've always wanted to say that, and I can't believe I've wasted it on you. Cross the line, Lemon. Someone's gonna stop you. New York is gonna stop you.
The old Liz would have agreed with you, but that was 2 days ago. Now, I don't cross lines. I just make them disappear.
Was a big fan of David Koepp, the writer. You know, Koepp was at the top of his game back then, making one big movie after the other, and I read the script and I really thought it was great. He did a great job. The movie works because of Koepp's writing and because of the design and all the way the whole thing was put together.
Did you think I wouldn't know?
I started writing on The Shadow before I'd had a big movie made. I had done a couple independent movies. Over the course of writing The Shadow, Jurassic Park, Death Becomes Her, and then Jurassic Park both came together, so it was a really exciting and fertile time. You know, I was in this period at Universal. I think I had 5 movies come out in 2 years.
I had worked with David Koepp, our writer, before because he wrote Carlito's Way. The Shadow, completely different genre, completely different type of movie. He's a prolific writer and so talented and just... It was really an honor to be a part of another one of his great scripts.
I think next thing we should probably go to is the first meeting between Lamont and Siwon Khan, where Khan just magically appears inside the Shadow Sanctuary because, again, movie has to movie. In and of itself is pretty much a hallmark of especially the superhero movies of that era, where there's a lot of you just don't think about it, we're just going to keep the plot going.
Don't think about it. Huh, let me think. So there's a guy who's trapped in a Tibetan artifact that talks about Khan. How old is the artifact? How old's the guy that's in the artifact? Because I mean, A, he speaks English very well. B, he knows Brooks Brothers, and he knows, is that Midtown? Like, I mean, there are a lot of things about this guy. Are we just supposed to assume that because he's this other world being in some sort of way that he gains this knowledge through the ether? Like, there are questions.
that's why, like, it would have worked better if it tied back to that earlier thing of, like, my brothers will have my revenge. And it's like, okay, maybe this whole thing is the revenge. Someone has been, like, they've been setting it up. One of them has been in New York this entire time learning about Lamont Cranston and getting into, installing things so that they can fuck with them. And instead of it being, like, you know, some mystical descendant of Genghis Khan, have it just be a super elaborate revenge scheme directly against him for fucking over that old guy.
Yeah.
It would have
been the father-like figure.
It would have been a character arc where he would have been like, oh, I'm paying for the sins of my past.
Oh, yeah, no, that absolutely would have worked. I the logic with Siwon Khan is, I think, essentially, it's because he's the Joker to the Shadows Batman. Like, one of Lamont's struggles for at least half of the movie is that he's looking at Siwon Khan and going, oh, God, that could be me.
Then that, again, he should, like, it would have made more sense if they literally were just other, fuck, damn it, this movie is so close to being just, like, perfect, and then it just went, wah! Great.
Oh, yeah, and, like, with that struggle that Lamont's having, there's a dream sequence where, I'm sorry, this movie puts at least the first three Mission Impossible movies to shame. Because the sequence where Lamont, like, literally just pulls his face off and reveals Siwon Khan underneath, that's actually shot better than any of the mask sequences in at least the first few Mission Impossible movies.
It was decent.
Like, they just the way that they hide the cuts in that sequence. And, again, going back to Margot and Lamont, as I said before in our Dreamscape review, Margot should not have powers. There's just no reason for it.
It doesn't lead anywhere.
Exactly.
She doesn't really do anything with it. It would be great if she was an instrument of them, or she was necessary to defeat them, or but no, it's entirely.
She's just a pretty face. That's a little weird.
Yeah, just a little weird.
Yeah. Now, if they were setting it up for future movies, I could understand.
Yeah.
Because they left potential on, they walked away from a lot of awesome potential. There could have been a sequel. They could have done it really well, and they could have had her more of an integral character in the movie. But no, she's just a pretty blonde, not quite vapid female.
Yeah,
in pretty clothes.
And like on the one hand, in the radio shows, Margot is basically there to be captured by the villain. Serve as bait in a trap that the Shadow has set.
Yeah.
Or to sit by the shortwave radio that Margot and the Shadow use and wait for instructions. And aside from flirting, at least to the standards of 30s and 40s society, that's literally all she was there for. So the fact that she doesn't...
flirting there?
The fact that she doesn't do a whole lot in this movie? Not all that surprising. But okay. At the same time, where essentially the sequence in the morning where she's behind the screen getting changed, she and Lamont are having a conversation where she keeps cutting him off. That sequence is basically why she has powers, and I hate it for that exact reason.
Oh.
It's basically it's to try to create that witty rapid fire banter that you would have seen in a lot of films of that era.
They could have just done that, though.
Yeah, yeah, I was just going to say, that's not really something you write. Good banter does not rely exclusively on writing.
Yeah.
If you have the chemistry between the two leads, and...
Which they didn't.
Well, they did, but they didn't, because there are exchanges in other parts of the movie between the two characters that don't rely on Margot having powers, and they're hitting that same banter just fine. And also, side note, when Alec Baldwin says the line, "Psychically, I'm very well endowed," watch Penelope Ann Miller very closely. Because as soon as they cut to her, after that line, she looks down at his crotch and says, "Oh, I'll bet you are."
Oh my God.
Yingo, I surrender.
You're finished, Khan.
Just real quick, if you don't mind me wrapping up.
Yeah, no.
It was definitely an interesting film. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sticky notes of stuff, but it was a fun movie. It reminded me of a lot of the superhero films that I grew up watching. Some not the best. Some Daredevil a couple of times, honestly. But I'll probably watch it again, just not anytime soon. But just to kind of see what someone else would think of it. But, So maybe 3 stars. But, anyway, it was fun.
That's reasonable.
2.5, 3 stars. But, fun as always.
I really like this film. I'm going to give it a 3.5 because, obviously, I feel like there are some things it could have done, could have reworked, could have rewritten to have gotten to a better place. But I'm not withholding a better rating because of the aspects that people would look at it today and be like, ew, like it's got weird timing, but I like the weird timing and the weird pacing. Except for that opening bit, I would cut that. It's got dated effects, but that makes it all the more enjoyable. I'm definitely going to try to hunt down that fan cut that's in black and white, because what I did is I just cut up like a little bit of the file and I turned it into black and white. Show it right here. So I did that myself just to get a feel of it. It would have taken forever to do the entire film, but it looks really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, normally, I would have you go first. But this time around, I'm going to go first because my rating, like, my thought here has to be just, like, ridiculously obvious, so I figure let's just get it out of the way. Quite simply, I'm going to do what this show has not done since our review of Endgame, where I am pulling out the Infinity rating card, because for me, like, this just gets everything. This is beyond 5. I still remember going to the Elgin Theater in Ottawa, actually about 6 months before it closed down. The Elgin was a single screen theater that would have been the equivalent of the Oxford, here in Halifax.
Okay.
And to this day, I still remember going to see this movie when I was 14, and it has literally never left my brain since that day. Does this thing have problems? Oh, sweet Lord, yes. Objectively, this is not a good movie. But at the same time, I would also be the first to tell you, I am completely and utterly incapable of being at all objective with this thing. This is just glorious. This is my cinematic comfort food. I have probably seen this thing 100 to 150 times over the years.
Wow.
And I still never ever get tired of it. Like we said, Penelope Ann Miller especially is absolutely perfectly cast. Mm-hmm. Everything about her in this film screams old Hollywood. Baldwin, I'll also very well cast. He does have that almost Clark Gable quality that they were looking for. But there are also points where his performance crosses that line from cocky to kind of arrogant. And there are, like I said earlier, there are moments between him and Margot where he's kind of misogynistic and a little bit creepy. And again, as Ian McKellen is just adorable. And
very absent-minded professor.
In every way imaginable. John Lone, as much as I respect the work that he put in, because apparently he was in character as Siwon Khan at all times on this movie. So imagine being in the lunch line in front of that guy. but yeah, I just love the hell out of this thing. And I literally can only think of one person on the entire planet who has the same love for this movie that I do. Who is Brian Salisbury from Junk Food Cinema, where listening to the episode where they talk about The Shadow, I'm just here like, yeah, Brian, we have never met, but you and I are friends. Vita, what about you?
For all that it was cheese and for all that it had issues, I actually did enjoy it. It is a movie that I would willingly watch again. It was great to see all of, and I hope that's not too loud for the mic. It was great to see all the familiar faces. Like, I could look at somebody and go, I've seen them in something before. It was great to see the cast that they brought together for this. Most of the actors were cast well. And for all that Baldwin is half the issue I have with the movie, he was cast well. Number rating, I would say 3.5-4. Again, I mean, it's a movie that I would willingly watch again, and I'll probably watch it next week just to catch anything that I might have missed this morning. So, like that whole scene with the windows in the cab.
Yes, probably, again, probably one of my all-time favorite continuity errors in all of cinema.
I want to look at the all the little trivia and the inside stuff that's on IMDb, too, just so that I can get a better idea of what others may have caught and then watch the movie again. So I'm looking forward to watching it again.
And I'm going to tell you right now, yes, one of those entries is mine.
Oh, okay.
One of the things that I talked about early on is in the opening credits of the movie, you know how every superhero film has that based on characters by credit?
Yeah.
The one in this movie is actually wrong.
Really?
It says based on characters from Adventure Magazine or something like it was something that starts with A anyway, and that's actually inaccurate because. Street and Smith Publications, who originally launched The Shadow, predates the company that they credit here. So like I said earlier, it's the equivalent of saying Captain America was created from Marvel Comics, even though Cap actually predates Marvel.
Gotcha.
With that, to wrap up, Addy the Adipose .redbubble.com if you are interested in Doctor Who related fashions and designs that have not been copied and recycled by 3/4 of the internet. And I'm not kidding. I mean, that one Adipose workout design alone has probably shown up in at least like 50 stores.
Wow.
Give or take, yeah. Vita, you?
We've heard from almost every annual show that I would have had booked, and they're all, surprise, COVID canceled. We are currently up to, what, so HellCon's canceled, Geekwinox is canceled, Montreal Comic Con would have been this month. I think we're currently up to, we're waiting to hear from Christmas at the Forum, which would be November.
Yeah.
In the interim, I am making a few online sales, and I am making masks and masks and masks. I bought more fabric today. Ooh. Yes. Like that.
I mean, it's not like I had this ready to pull out or anything.
Good, because mine's buried somewhere. I've got a lot of cute, geeky fabrics. And yeah. Today I picked up some coffee-inspired fabric. There's a chance I'll be hitting Avonport Discount Fabric Store sometime this week to get more, good Lord, geeky fabrics. Because I only have, let's see, including today's purchases, probably 80 different fabric options. I don't need any more.
No. Clearly not.
But yeah, that is my life right now. Work and sewing. So.
With that, normally, I would say what we'll be doing next month or in the next couple of weeks, but with like this now being the fourth episode we'll have in the can for editing, I have no idea when this is going to be released, so I'm just going to say that our next episode, I think what we're going to actually plug a bit of a hole in our catalog. Last December, due to scheduling, we were supposed to do episode 9 of Star Wars, and we were able to record it, but again, holiday season, so editing just didn't happen. And I think particularly with, Natasha joining us, who is a major Star Wars fan, I can't see a better time to go back and do this one again than right now. Aside from the fact that means I have to watch the damn thing.
That's okay. I've done 1 through 6.
Until then, and we next get to remind you all what evil lurks in the hearts of cinema. I had to cram the tagline in somewhere.
Yeah, you had to.
Oh, yeah. Until next time, bye-bye.